I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Hey, ladies, coming to you from social distancing. It is the upside of the coronavirus, aka COVID-19. I am Leanna Kersner coming to you. Many of you are also likely in self-isolation or flat-out quarantine. So we are going to give you a boost of positivity to your 14-day week. Joining me this episode is producer and playwright Rose Jardine. She's a life coach and youth advocate who uses the arts as a catalyst to bring to light a variety of social issues for the purposes of dialogue, community engagement, and social change. And Michelle Badusky, a social activist, author, motivational speaker. She's living in rural Manitoba, just outside of Brandon, with her husband and four children. We've got another urban-rural episode. But Rose, you were the one that made me go, okay, we got to do this, because I was just thinking, oh my God, there's going to be a Gen Z baby boom because of COVID-19. And no sooner did I think that I got a text from you, Rose, going, there's going to be a baby boom. So I'll let you take that one first.
Well, it has been proven in history.
Yep.
And even here, not going back that far. Do you remember when we had the blackout?
Yep.
There was a surge in baby booms. Yep. When the NHL went on strike,
yep,
there was a surge in baby booms. When there was another time when there was a freeze lockdown where, like, the weather had kind of, like, kept everybody home.
Yeah.
Baby booms.
Yeah.
This is, like, the first time within the past, I would say, century, that NHL, NBA, and every other sport is on lockdown all at the same time. Then you have all the recreational centers are on lockdown. There's nothing for people to do. So what
concerts,
do people do?
Concerts, everything.
Everything.
Yep.
Everything is locked down. When Live Nation shuts its doors, you know life is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you know.
So in 9 months, and it'll probably be like a 2 month baby boom, right?
Oh, it might be. Well, depending on how long this lasts, right?
Yeah.
And depending on where, like, so Italy would probably have a baby boom quicker than we would, because they went on lockdown before we did. So it's about watching geographically when the lockdown started or the isolation started, and then compare it to then, that 9-10 month period.
Yeah.
But by January, February of next year, there's going to be a lot of babies.
Yeah. And the best thing about that for me is that 20-somethings will hopefully shut up about that okay boomer shit. I cannot stand the okay boomer thing, other than the Yoda baby Yoda meme that makes me laugh. You know, that do or do not, there is no try. Boomer okay. Why, you little like, I like that. But the okay boomer thing bugs me, and I will be very glad to see that stop when Gen Z, who doesn't know how to handle being alone, will have a massive baby boom, because even when they're alone, they find ways to not be alone. So, Michelle, what's one of your upsides of COVID-19?
You know what? I'm not going to be having a baby in 9 months or any freaking time in the future. I've been on lockdown with three of my children for a week already, with at least another three to go.
Yeah.
No more babies for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are some upsides, as scary and as terrifying as this is. And one of the great ones is the actual time that we're spending as a family.
Right.
Being interactive and actually getting involved in creative ways of spending time together, because all of a sudden our regular lives, our regular routines are disrupted.
Right.
And it's like, okay, what's the new normal now? And after a week, you know, me and my kids are kind of figuring it out, and we're doing things that, you know, I don't think I could ever get them to do before. You know, I had my kids, you know, doing math class this morning in a cool, fun way. And just that personal interaction away from school screens, you know, and life getting involved. And we've come closer as a family, I think. And to me, that's number one.
That's awesome, because I've been seeing a lot of memes that we'll talk about in another episode. Yep. But I know that my pets are really happy because my husband and I are home more. You know, pets across the world are probably going, yay, humans are home. And we're going to have to deal with some separation anxiety when everybody comes back. But for now, there's a lot of really happy kitties and puppies and bunnies and ferrets out there because they got their humans home all the time.
Well, and you know, it goes for our kids too, right? It's like suddenly we are all interacting with each other in a very different way. And we know that it's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
So the stress for me isn't really there because it's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm already a week into this. And it's like, we've come up with a new normal. So yeah. Everyone who this is new for, like here in Manitoba, schools are done today. And people are panicking and freaking out, and I get that. But this time next week, it's going to be a new norm.
Yeah.
And that panic's going to drop, go down.
And I'm hoping that this will be a time for people to reassess or newly assess what is really important in life. I'm really hoping that happens because...
You mean you guys don't know what's important in life?
Well...
Really? Toilet paper.
I have a very different sense.
I have a bidet.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, we are winning the toilet paper war. We have a bidet.
See, just saying. I have a shower and a washcloth. I've been doing a ton of science lately, seeing if toilet paper is, like, there's a bunch of things I've been doing. One is I've been eating a lot of foods that cause rancid farts. Because people don't understand six feet. And so I have been preparing myself to go out. If people get too close, broccoli and cheddar has been the best combo for me. Franks and beans did not work because it was vegan. It doesn't have the same impact. Didn't have, you know, the typical thing. But broccoli and cheddar, I'm ready, man. Anybody gets within 6 feet of me, they are going to get gassed.
Well, that's an interesting and very creative way of keeping social distancing that I'm not going to share with my children. Thank you.
Yeah, because they'll think it's hilarious. But I forget which store it was, but I was standing way back, and the two people in front of me in line were standing right next to each other, like they weren't even paying attention. I'm like, I need to be protected. But joking aside, I had a conversation on Twitch yesterday that was really interesting. What truly is a need versus what is a want? And how a lot of our social ills right now are people thinking they need things that they really don't. And a lot of it is connected to unhealthy external validation. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Like status symbols and activities and all these things that people use to fake validate, if that makes sense, instead of actually getting that validation from within and being cool with themselves as a person. Rose, I wonder, because I know this is in your wheelhouse. I wonder what you think about this thought.
Well, they didn't have that before. So, you know, you add into the mix a social issue,
right?
Then that's going to make their, you know, that whole entire need for external validation even larger, right? Because that also comes with its own level of depression and insecurities,
yeah,
and anxiety,
yeah.
Right? I find it like the amount of people whose anxiety levels have gone up based on their experience of isolation and ration, or the, you know, the fact that they feel they may not have enough or they need more, you know, it's this, it's just taking over their minds beyond the need. So their ability to actually bring it back and say, okay, what's a need, what's a want?
Yeah.
It's not there. They don't have that rational ability right now.
Really?
That's just my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been like, what can I make with lentils, beans, or peas right now? There's been a lot of Ethiopian food going on at my house because surprisingly simple. Ethiopian food is surprisingly simple.
Oh, well, yeah.
And it's right all herbs? Based. Yeah. Well, onions, yeah. Garlic, ginger, some kind of legume, and a lot of spice.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's working out great. But I hope that some of these people that are freaking out now, like, have you guys seen this? Like, on Facebook, people going, there's going to be so much death and despair, and I don't know if I can handle it. I don't want to face tomorrow. Have you guys seen
that? Oh, my God.
You have, eh?
You know, I'm going to give myself a little bit of a plug here. I run a Facebook page here in Southwest Manitoba called Keeping It Real. It used to be called Real Westman. We got like, I don't know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 followers. And what I do is on a daily basis, what I've been doing for last week is keeping the updates going. You know, this is what the Fed's saying. This is what, you know, and keeping the real stuff. Like, here are the links, not the bullshit. You know, we've been spending a lot of time debunking fake information. And people are freaking out at a level that I don't understand. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do with my kids at home? I'm like, really? Your That's parents? Like your big thing? You know, like, I get it. It's stressful. My six-year-old has asthma. And I'm like, you know what? I shut down two of my businesses. We have no income from those businesses. And yet we still have all the small business bills coming. I get that. But you know what? What Rose was saying, it's like, what's really important? Yeah. I can always make more money. I can always, you know, go to bingo another night. I can always go to the bar later when this is all done. I can't replace my family. So it's like, what's really important? That's what we have an opportunity to teach our kids here and show them that they are not, you know, dependent on all of these social constructs for their validation. You know, I've got a teenage daughter and I have to set the example. If I'm sitting here freaking out going, oh my God, what am I going to do? Life is horrible. Life sucks.
Yeah.
We are nothing without those social constructs and the validation. What is that teaching her when this is over?
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to add, that it will let you know who in your social circle is, you know, a self-actualized human being and who might have been really good at hiding those lack of self-actualization skills, but no, personally, I think those people eventually end up being toxic. So,
oh, absolutely. And you can even tell, you want to talk about something that's beneficial. You can find out who in your circle really does care about others. Are they the ones hoarding the toilet paper? Are they the ones making jokes? Are they the one refusing to help their neighbor or, you know, because they're so terrified? You know, times of trouble really show people's true colors.
That's a perfect segue to what I wanted to go into as well, because there's this whole thing about Instagram concerts and artists doing live concerts online, being on the news. And I think, and Rose, I'm sure you have strong opinions on this, that we're going to see the artists who are truly authentic people and the people who are really just sort of trying to get attention. And I think that's going to redefine sort of who people look to as not just sort of artists who make music we like or make TV shows we like, but also people who are sort of, you know, good people that we're okay, like we feel good supporting because they're decent human beings. What do you think about this?
Yeah, the music industry has never been based on decent human beings.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can't even really measure that, right? I mean, you know, like Bono. Yeah. Bono's an amazing human being, right? And he may not publicly do a live concert on Instagram, but
he already dedicated a song to frontline medical workers.
Okay. But that's my point. But, you know, you have stars who may not put themselves out there in that way, but behind closed doors are donating millions to the cause. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I don't know if we can necessarily judge people based on that.
I'm not sure that makes Bono seem like a good person, though. I'm very conflicted about Bono.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of Bono's charity work is about Bono. And I compare that to somebody like, you know, one of these more constructed personas who sort of know that it's time to just sort of shut up. Like maybe they're taking the time to go compose music and there'll be a huge boom of, you know, singles or albums in a month or something. But then there are people, like I saw a thing with Melissa Etheridge and somebody asked her why she's doing daily concerts through social media. And her answer was just so honest that I'm like, okay, I like you even more now, Melissa Etheridge, because she said, if I don't do this, I am going to go crazy. Good. And she wasn't performing. It wasn't performative goodness. It was honest. And it's like, okay, that's super cool. You know, not like these like Gen Z bands who are performing on CBC not well. You know, Melissa Etheridge is like, no, I need to do this because this is what I do and I'm going to go kind of nuts and this is sort of for me instead of somebody else. There's
Lizzo did, she did, at first she didn't do a concert. She did a meditation online.
Yes, I love that. I mean, I love Lizzo.
And she did it way before anybody was jumping on it. She was like, look, you know, and that, what's his name? He plays the cello. Okay, why is his name not coming to me right now?
The classical music performer.
Yes, he did a live concert too, which was just beautiful. They kind of started the trend because they did it way before the shutdown or the compulsive isolation was implemented. They started saying, okay, people, you know, we need to come together and calm down.
Well, I will say one of the things that people should know is classical music performers are getting hammered right now. And this is something I didn't know. Like when I do live comedy shows, we have basically, we get paid a certain amount of the fee if the venue cancels, right? Mm-hmm. We get paid whether the show on goes on or not. Apparently these like highly trained opera singers and classical musicians know they have a force majeure clause in their contract that if they don't perform, if like the La Scala shuts down in Italy like it is right now, they don't get paid. So one of the things that people should be aware of, if you do support classical music or just sort of appreciate it in sort of the abstract, try to do something to support those performers because they are suddenly absolutely without income. And I think we're going to see a lot more awareness of how hand-to-mouth artists are.
Well,
go ahead.
I'm really immersed in the arts community where I am, and it's really bad. Artists are suffering because a lot of them work on contract.
Yep. So and all those contracts are just canceled.
Right. And it's not their fault. It's not the employer's fault. It is what it is. Right.
That's right.
And so it's like there is no substitute because there's no way to find a job in this period of time. Right. So the community at large, the artist community, is suffering severely by what's going on. And it puts a whole new spin on starving artists.
Yes.
Now, all the areas where the government has been offering to help and help businesses, nothing has been said about the artists in Toronto. Nothing.
Well, I guess they would be covered under the people who don't qualify for employment insurance.
Probably.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the same as us that, you know, that are losing our business income and things like that. Hopefully there will be some help there. But I mean, we have yet to see. They just announced it. And what I find funny is they just announced it. And within 10 minutes of the announcement, people are going, where do I apply? What about me? It's like, hey, you know what? This is a highly complex political benefit pact. It's worth over $80 billion. And they got to figure out how to get it to 35 million Canadians. You know, I know nobody wants to wait, but we're going to have to wait.
But this,
and it sucks for all of us.
This has made me very sort of patriotic at the moment because I've been watching, you know, the U.S. news and what's going on down there. And then I've been watching the Canadian news and how together our government is.
How
the fact like, oh no, we've ordered 500 extra ventilators just in case. We've gotten no requests from the provinces yet, but we've ordered them, you know, just, I got a feeling we're going to need them. And, you know, like, oh, we've got a company, we've got, you know, Thornhill Medical that makes ventilators within Canada. We've got a company in Montreal that makes protective gear. Like, we're kicking ass as a country.
Well, you know what I thought was absolutely beautiful? They didn't say which alcohol company it was, but they started handing out free alcohol as hand sanitizer. So they were taking the purified alcohol and bottling it as hand sanitizer and giving it away free to people.
Yeah, there were a couple. There was a gin company, and I didn't catch the name, but then a big one that it's their spirits companies, people who make like gin, vodka, things like that. Yeah, they're just retooling for hand sanitizer, which lets us all know that in a pinch, we can use vodka as sanitizer.
So it works inside and out.
Yeah, Michelle, you have an excuse to bathe in vodka now.
That's good, because I've been doing it for years. Now I just can justify it.
But yeah, I mean, that it's interesting because one of the things people have been saying is, why are LCBOs still open? Like, why are liquor stores still open? LCBO is the Ontario.
Yeah, we have the MLCC, but yeah.
The reason for this, I actually researched this and got it from, I think it was the premier of New Brunswick, that they are keeping liquor stores open to prevent a boom in black market business.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And think about that. If you are, especially if you're dealing with an addiction, but even if you're isolated, do we really want people buying black market stuff that they're going to ingest? And then we have to like deal with that in our healthcare system? No, thanks.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, you don't want people drinking bathtub gin.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, for addicts right now, Rose, you brought this up, and this is probably going to be a separate topic, but I know you have thoughts about this. Addicts at this time, you said this is causing some extra complications for people struggling with that issue. So let's take a moment to talk about that, even though that isn't like a lighter thing. Let's get the information out there while we can. What's going on? What do people who are struggling with addiction do in these situations?
Well, one of the biggest things that happens with people who are suffering with addictions is isolation is one of the biggest pushers of addiction.
Right.
So now, in a time of self-isolation, and all at AA and NA, any type of support meetings have all been canceled. Churches, anywhere where they would have gathered for community, has now been dismantled.
There's got to be some sort of online substitute, isn't there, somewhere?
Yeah, there absolutely is, but there's no, that's not the real reason why people go to these meetings. It's not like these meetings are always great and fun. It's about the community. Yeah. It's about connecting with other people that, you know, handshake or that pat on your shoulder or that eye-to-eye contact, which is now not necessarily available. So, you know, people are struggling and they are seeing a boom in addiction. I think Ottawa said that the opioid crisis boomed. I think I sent you an article on that as well.
Wow. Is that anxiety or is that like, because I mean, the social isolation hasn't been going on long enough to cause that in and of itself.
But the fear of it being long-term,
the fear,
can drive an addict. I mean, I'm a recovering addict.
You're dealing with compulsive behaviors.
Exactly. It's like, you know what? If I know that I can get to a meeting tomorrow, I can sit there and watch the clock for the next 24 hours and tick off the minutes if I have to. But if I'm that, you know, if I know that there's no known end to that isolation, that is and can be debilitating.
But I mean, that's wisdom that people who haven't experienced this sort of thing before could draw on.
Oh, absolutely. So Toronto Star put out an article on March 19th.
Yeah. That was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're battling addiction, the virus, isolation brings its own perils.
Right.
So this was a person who was talking about his addiction and how, you know, this whole idea of being in isolation, how it can impact you. And mm-hmm. he's actually offered support at the end of his article.
Right. Right. And of course, the Star has paywalled the frigging article. Good job, Toronto Star.
That drives me nuts. That's a whole new episode.
Yeah.
Like newspapers should really be making those sorts of things free. And this is an upside to this. I hope businesses start waking up, and this is everybody, including banks, including mortgage companies, private lenders, newspapers. People remember people who do something for something other than immediate profit. So if a bank delays or even, heaven forbid, forgives a couple of interest cycles on somebody's mortgage or any other sort of personal or business loan. People will remember that, and that creates customer loyalty. I know it works with me. You know, I stay with a company that might cost me a little bit more, but I know that I can pick up the phone and get someone on the phone and call them and say, hey, can we work this out? That peace of mind is really important to me.
Well, it's all about building relationships, right? Like, I teach customer relationships, and especially in this day and age, in global market and access to everything and anything online, in order to be profitable long-term in any business, you have to build relationships.
Yes.
And how you treat people in times of difficulty speaks volumes to your core values. I use the hashtag people before profit. I've been using this for years in my business. It's never come in as handy as it has in the last little while. But it's like, now is not the time to be gouging. Now is not the time to be an asshole in business, regardless of your business.
Well, yeah, because all you need is one bank to offer people the opportunity to switch, and all that business will come flooding into them once this is over. Well, I'm surprised the bank hasn't done that already.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, all of the major banks have already announced, they just announced kind of almost blanket mortgage deferrals for 6 months. But the credit unions haven't come out with that yet.
Neither have mortgage brokers. And a lot of people, because of the tightened lending laws, a lot of people are with private brokers.
So it's interesting because, you know, we were talking about, you know, going back to what you guys were talking about, artists and musicians doing these concerts. And it's like, the ones that do it first are the ones that you kind of feel like, oh, wow, this is awesome. Like, look at how selfless they are being, and they're giving away and they're doing all this. But the ones that come up afterwards and kind of get on the bandwagon and follow it as a trend, you kind of go, well, you're kind of forced to now.
Yeah.
You're only doing it because we guilted it into you, right? And that,
and
to me, again,
a novel spin on it that makes it new, right?
Yeah, it just makes it feel a little disingenuous. Don't get me wrong, it's still amazing.
Yeah.
But when you're doing it because everyone else has done it and you feel, you know, the need to keep up with the Joneses, you know, it's a little frustrating for me.
Oh, I mean, I think that, you know, Rose touched on something before with the idea that we think of artists and small business owners as different beasts, for lack of a better term. They're not.
No, artist, they just have different products.
Right. An artist is a small business proprietor. Their business is just
art. If they have their business stuff in check, right? Like, that's the other thing with artists. You have your starving artist.
Right.
But a lot of times it's because that artist is the unorganized artist, right?
Like, yes.
To have things implemented in a way where they can apply for EI or they can apply for certain things, you know, they're not necessarily looking at the business aspect as much as they are focusing on their artistry.
Yeah, but I mean,
just want to go ahead.
I think people are going to discover they have skills they didn't know they had this process. Yeah, I think people are going to realize, no, you are capable of more than you think. You are. I mean, this is the first real immediate crisis that
a very long time.
One generation, possibly two, has.
We've faced. Never had something like this in, you know, the last two or three generations.
Yeah, since the end of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was real. I mean, the 80s recession, the 90s recession. I mean, I guess you could claim that, you know, millennials had to deal with the subprime thing. That was real. But a lot of them were teenagers or very young adults at the time. This is the first, like, duck and cover equivalent. Did you guys do those drills where you had to do, like, just in case we get bombed, hide under your desk?
I don't think so.
Went to school in northern Manitoba. Nobody was bombing us.
Because one of the things they did, because I grew up in the Jane Finch neighborhood, so they did everything they possibly could to stop us from turning into delinquents. We did these wilderness survival getaways. You know, when you were younger, when you were in fifth grade, you went away for a weekend. When you were older, seventh grade, it was like 5 days. It was the entire school week. And this is why when people are like, what am I supposed to do with my kid for a week or two? It's like 2 weeks of school is not going to turn, you know, losing 2 weeks of school is not going to turn your kid into a moron. Just saying, yeah. Don't worry about it. But they took us out in the wilderness and they actually taught us how to survive. It came in very handy during that blackout. But I remember one of the things, and I thought of this when people started hoarding toilet paper. They did, okay, here's a list of 30 things. Pick 10 that you're going to take to survive. And the first time people do it, they always pick the wrong things, right? Our perception of need and what we actually do need is very different. And that sort of experience, it does change your thinking. It does change your relationship with stuff.
Well, you know what? I think along those lines is I grew up in poverty. Mm-hmm. You know, in northern Manitoba, I grew up in a family of abuse and addiction and poverty. So my idea, you know, I live very well now. Don't get me wrong. We are very fortunate. But this idea of need,
yeah,
is almost laughable. I had a conversation going on my Facebook page about how fast food restaurants should be deemed essential services because no one knows how to cook anymore. And I literally spit my coffee out on my freaking computer.
That freaks me out that people don't know how to cook.
It's like, well, if you want to think of something good that's going to come out of this, people are going to have to learn how to freaking feed themselves.
Yeah, Rosa,
there's condos in the downtown core.
Without kitchens.
That are, exactly.
Yep, I've seen
they don't have kitchens. They have kitchenettes.
Yep.
A space for a microwave and maybe those, like, you know, the little burners, the two little burner thingy.
Yeah.
But there's no stove. There's no real oven. It's a microwave.
Well, so, and that's
in a tiny little fridge. So because these people don't cook, they eat out all the time.
Yeah.
Well, and that's something good that's going to come out of this is that people are going to realize that our reliance on technology, our reliance on other people, our reliance on the conveniences that have made us an unhealthy, unsociable country mm-hmm. are actually a disadvantage, and we kind of need to get back to basics. It's like, you know what, if it's gonna suck, I'm gonna be honest, out here in rural Manitoba, if our internet and cell service goes down, it's gonna suck, but we've done it before because we have, you know, unreliable electricity in the winter, right. So it's like, well, you know what, I still have like hundreds of DVDs, we have books, we have all of these things that if I was living in one of those condos without a kitchen, it's like, how the hell would I teach my children to survive?
Yeah.
If, you know, McDonald's was my go-to. It's like, we're going to cook. You know, I'm teaching them.
That whole thing staggered me that they have to have restaurants open for takeout because people rely on restaurants to feed themselves.
Yeah. And that's a sad state of our country, our society, not just our country, but North American society.
Yeah. But I mean, the other thing I want to pivot to that's along the same line is the climate, right? Have you guys seen the maps of the reduction of air pollution?
Yes, sorry, we have. But before we go there,
right.
I want you to remember that. But I just wanted to answer the question that you asked me was around why is the addictions going up?
Right.
So according to Ottawa, the addictions is going up out of fear.
Yes.
So it's all fear based.
Yeah. It's anxiety.
Right.
And
so specifically the opioids are on a high climb because of a lot of times it starts off being used for physical pain, but what opioids really does is it attacks the area of the brain that deals with emotional pain. Mm-hmm. And that's where the addiction comes from with the opioids. So the spike in opioids is based upon fear. And one of the areas where they're seeing the spike is specifically in the homeless population because shelters don't know what to do. And how do you control a COVID-19 breakout in the homeless population?
Yeah. They had to shut down the open doors in churches because they were completely, you know, unsupervised, like everybody's in the same room sort of thing. But
right.
I want to reassure people that in Canada, we're still in the realm of precautionary measures.
Right.
Yeah. And so,
and they haven't closed all the doors to the shelter. I think they're just setting beds up differently, and a lot more soup kitchens has opened up. So you can't necessarily go inside and sit,
but you can't get food.
Still go and get your hot food.
Yeah,
get hot food and get meals. That's still being provided.
On the municipal, provincial, and federal levels of government in Canada, despite their differences, are really cutting the bullshit. And, you know, I give credit to every government right now because they are cutting the bullshit. You know, even those politicians I don't like very much, usually, I have to give them credit. People like Doug Ford, he has cut the bullshit. Temporarily. I hope that continues. I don't expect it to, but it's nice to see they can do it.
Well, you know, and I got to give a shout out. I am not a fan of I haven't been a fan of our provincial conservative government here in Manitoba with Premier Pallister, but he's done an incredible job. I watch these guys every single day. He or his team goes live here in Manitoba, and they're calm and they're reassuring and they're providing leadership that we've seen, you know, very little of. You know, they've gotten rid of the partisan politics, and most people, I shouldn't say all people,
of compassion.
Yeah, it's like we're all screwed. This, you know, it's not like this is a liberal disease. This is, you know, all of us. And our economy is hurting. So it's time to come together and realize what's really important here.
I think it's interesting that all of a sudden conservatives love federal
socialism?
Money.
Socialism?
And yeah, well, it's not even socialism. It's just government diligence, right? Like government takes care of their people.
It is. I have to make a comment because I run a social media page for one of my business platforms. And we've got like, I don't know, 5,000 or 6,000 people on this page. Majority are in the U.S. because our industry runs, you know, internationally, and they're having this conversation about, you know, when are these government checks coming out for businesses? And these are the same people that were on that page bashing, you know, 2 weeks ago. They're bashing Bernie Sanders and the idea of, you know, healthcare. And I'm like, really? You know, when you're in the one that's in need, suddenly it's not that big of a deal to get a government check. And it's changed people's idea of politics. So if we want to get back to the point of the show and go, what are some of the positives? I think it's brought, you know, some centralism to politics where people are really getting an idea of what matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think people need to stop throwing around the word socialism when what it really is supportive capitalism.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're all business owners here on this podcast. And so it's like, you know, we're all recognizing we are in a small country where the population is fairly spread out along the southern border, which benefits us in a pandemic. But we recognize in order to stay competitive in the global economy, we do need some supports from our various government. That's not socialism. That is supporting capitalism.
Well, and you got to understand that, let's say, you know, and I've been dealing with this in the last few days, $82 billion in federal aid. Everyone's freaking out about this debt. And it's like, I made the comparison, and I mean, it's a little bit different, but if my children are hungry and I've got a credit card with room on it, you can damn well be sure I'm putting groceries on that credit card. Exactly. I will worry about how to pay for it later. Mm-hmm. And this $82 billion that is being funneled into our economy is actually going to come back into the government coffers. We're going to spend that money. We're going to be spending it. We're going to be buying groceries and paying rent. Like, it's not disappearing. It's helping people.
Let me ease some people's minds on whether or not we can afford this massive government expenditure right now. The 80 billion plus outflow from our government is 3% of our GDP. Okay. There's a number called the debt to GDP ratio where they use to measure how liquid, how prepared a country is to handle economic shocks. Canada's before this was floating around 31%, set to go up a couple of points because of deficit spending. That so this is going to go up to around 35% debt to GDP, right? Mm-hmm. Compare that to the U.S. that has 121% debt to GDP ratio.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's one of those good things is that people are going to start to realize, you know, because of our political situation in this country over the last 6 months, there's been a lot of confusion. You know, people are going, our economy is shut, our country's going to hell, blah, blah, blah. And now all of a sudden they're realizing, No, it's not.
No, we're in incredibly good shape.
And we should be grateful, right?
Yeah, we should be grateful, but we should also be really proud, you know, that Canada voted for the policies that got us here. Canadians weren't snowed by very, very sort of pedantic, oversimplified economic metaphors that caused us to vote against our own best interests. We've done okay as a people.
Yes.
To this point. And now we're reaping the benefits of it because, I mean, Canada's always historically been excellent in terms of mobilizing in crises. We're really good for that. But I think also our sort of open attitude towards immigrants has brought a lot of innovation to this country. And like all those people who came from war zones, they're ready right now. They know what to do, you know? And, you know, all the decisions we've collectively made as a people have made us uniquely prepared for this moment. I think we can all sort of take a moment and be proud of that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. And, you know, I think that is one of the benefits that's going to come from this is this is going to sound awful, but it's actually going to bridge that divide we've seen in Canada.
I hope so, because it's getting so stupid.
It has to, right?
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we realize that we're all in this together, that, you know, the enemy of my enemy is what is it? The friend of my whatever that
enemy of my enemy is my friend.
That's it.
And right now the enemy's a virus.
Exactly, right? Yeah. It's not politics. This is a global pandemic. Like, we're all in it together. We're all at risk. We're all losing money. We're all losing jobs. And what is driving me nuts a little bit now is we're still seeing a whole lot of people going, what about me? What about me? But in general, the overall feeling is we all have to do our part. And when we are voluntarily shutting down businesses to protect the common people, the common good, that's a sign of that's a sign of Canada that, you know, we need the world to see.
Yeah. And I noticed that a lot of the US media is being very, very quiet about Canada's response. They're bringing up South Korea and Japan and China, these like faraway places.
We make them look bad.
It's like they don't want to give a nod to the fact that, hey, you know, your neighbor to the north, we're doing a lot better.
But I think part of that is because our numbers are so low.
In comparison to
other places, our numbers in regards to the virus, we're not in the top five.
No.
And I don't even think we're in the top 10 in regards to cases.
Not yet, though. Like, and I don't mean to fearmonger, but we are really early in the stages here. It is going to get worse. But because we've so aggressively been proactive, if we can actually contain that, and I keep telling people online that if it feels a month from now or 3 months from now that we massively overreacted, that's good. That's the goal.
Well, I know it doesn't look like things are flattening out right now in terms of numbers, but we're not seeing the exponential spikes, which is good. And we can expect to see cases go up until around the 25th. And that's okay. You know, I don't think people should, unless you're a statistics nerd like me, you shouldn't be poring over this data because it's just going to be causing you anxiety.
Yeah.
Still low. Regardless what, Canada is low. We're not even up to 50 deaths.
We had our first case January 25th. I remember speaking to a friend of mine back then who is part of Air Canada cleaning crews. And they were talking about how the crews that clean the planes were already going, oh no, we're not going on those planes without protective equipment. We know there's a disease coming, you know, they were servicing flights coming out of China at the time. Now, Iran and Italy caught Canada quite flat-footed, but still, we haven't had the explosions that New York State and Washington State have had in the U.S. And people think it's because, oh, we don't have the population. In terms of population density, most of Canadians live in cities.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's important to remember, that just because our relative population is small, the percentage of our population that lives in cities, you know, Toronto's up there, 5 million people, right?
Yep.
Comparison, New York's under 9. So we're like half a New York. We're not seeing those numbers. We have fewer cases in all of Canada than New York State has.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we did the last time I checked. That matters. That's important. These are signs of hope. The thing hasn't just gone crazy in our populations the way it did in the U.S.
And I think that's why we need to be diligent. And those of us that have any kind of influence in our communities or on social media need to be diligent in reminding people why these measures, even though they seem extreme, because we see that people are saying, well, we don't have the numbers. This is ridiculous. I'm losing money. I'm losing my job. We're doing it so that we don't see those numbers here.
Exactly. Right.
And we need to, those of us that with any kind of voice, need to keep reminding people that we're doing this for the greater good, you know, that hopefully we are, you know, a month from now, we're going, yeah, we overreacted. Look at, it worked. You know, that flatten the curve thing is important. What worries me is, especially being in rural towns, we see a lot, and I've seen it a lot, even in my own community. We only have 1,000 people here. We don't have a doctor's office. We don't have a emergency room. And we're seeing a lot of snowbirds come back and not self-isolating. Because I've had someone actually talk to me straight to my face, and it's like, oh, I just got back from Florida 5 days ago.
Oh, yikes.
And I'm like, what the hell are you doing here? I got a 6-year-old with asthma, right? Like, so as long as we can continue to be diligent and get the message out there and make people realize that their actions are important, mm-hmm. we can stop that. But if we don't, if we lessen it and go, oh, you know, it's over, it's okay, that's where we're going to see that spike. And people need to understand why we're doing this.
Well, I think that if we all sort of work together and get it under control, then we can start easing some of the social restrictions and things can, mm-hmm. Everything's not going to go back to normal like all of a sudden. It's going to be a general easing of
stuff. Do you think it will ever be back to normal though? Or are we looking at a new normal?
I don't think, despite what some people have said, I don't think a month is enough to change people's behavior permanently.
No, I don't think, a couple of things. Number one, I don't think a month is going to be long enough. Yes. I think that the isolation period should be at least 6 weeks.
Well, that's what they're preparing people for. I suspect that after this 2-week period, you're going to see a few things start easing back, more services. I mean, automotive workers are probably going to be going back because the plants have been retooled. You know, manufacturing workers will probably be going back manufacturing essential equipment. They are going to have to start getting some things up and running again just because of supply chain. I think, though, that certain things, the one thing I hope will become a new normal, the habit I hope will change, is that for workers, stay home when you're sick. For employers, don't give people a hard time about staying home when they're sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like have more paid sick leave. I think there's going to be a major debate about paid sick leave, especially in the US. But with the, you know, with gig economies and things like that in Canada, there have to be more discussions about working that into contract jobs. You know, the ability to work from home more flexibly.
We're going to definitely see that because now people are realizing they can.
Right. Well, it's also,
it's not as hard. And also people are enjoying it. They don't have to be in the traffic. You know, like it has its benefits.
Well, and the benefit to the climate has been immediate. Oh. I brought this up before, but I mean, just people not going to work. It's not just factories. It's cars.
Well, you know, and it is, there's so many differences. Like you look at it and it's like, yeah, the benefit to the environment, you can actually see it. Like you look at those literally satellite maps, you can see it.
You can see the bottom of the Venice canals.
But you know,
for
those people that are still going, I don't give a shit about the climate. You can see it in your pocketbook. Like, okay, you want to talk about the economy. Gas has never been cheaper than it is now. And we have nowhere to go. That's a little ironic, but it's, you know, all of a sudden not commuting.
Yeah.
that's a big deal. That's, you know, $300-$400, maybe more dollars a month in your pocket just by working from home.
Yeah. And even if businesses worked out, like, remember we used to have casual Fridays before it was casual every day. If it was like work from home Wednesdays or something like that, or some day where just, or it revolved that there was a day of the week that everybody was in the office for meetings, but when it was convenient, they'd work from home, they'd work half days from home, something like that. Full days would be better because you're not commuting. But the impact on the climate, you're cutting a fifth of the greenhouse gases connected to commuting. That would be huge.
Well, and it's, I think we are going to see that, because I've already seen it here in rural Manitoba, and people are going, oh, wow, you know, not driving into Brandon, which is 35 minutes away every day, is making a huge impact. And it's more time with your family. You know, like I, going back to what I started with, what I'm seeing is all of a sudden me and my kids, they're getting involved in, you know, I call it home ec class.
Nice.
It's like, okay, I'm, you know, recording this podcast. So while I'm doing this, you guys are in home ec, sweep the floor and clean up your toys.
That's smart.
And these are life skills, and I'm trying to make it as fun as possible. But the reality is I'm still working even though I'm home. So they need to pitch in a little. So it's teaching them about being a, you know, a member of like a family, a member of a community, and how everybody does everything together. And if we keep talking about that, and it pisses me off when I'm seeing people screaming about being at home, it's like, because your children are listening to that.
Yeah.
If they see you bitching about having to stay home or lose a paycheck to save, you know, potentially save someone's life.
Yeah.
You're teaching them about humanity.
Well, I also think going back to the thing both you ladies brought up before, that we are, this is a crash course in life skills.
Yep.
For a lot of people, not just young people, a lot of people, period. And I think that ultimately will make us better as a society, because not only will people learn some skills finally, but they'll have a better appreciation for people who have those skills. You know, that food doesn't just appear on your table. You know, the person who does the cooking in your family, maybe be a little more grateful for that. That all this extra work you're having to do now, they do that all the time.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, it's something to keep in mind, because as somebody who does cook, I think it's a life skill. I have always been, I had to learn to cook by necessity, but I'm a science nerd, so I like the chemistry involved in things. That's why I started baking bread. I like, ooh, you know, the rising science. But it not only does it give you food, but it also gives you less anxiety when things like this start shutting down. Because yesterday I actually like, okay, what stuff that's been sitting around in my kitchen that's been sitting here forever that I can use up? And I realized that I had a couple packages of the dried lasagna noodles. You know, the ones you have to boil before you make? Fresh, hoity-toity, ooh la la, me, right? And so I crushed them up and made them into what would normally be like a bow tie pasta or something like that dish, but it was like a mix of whole grain and spinach pasta. It was just kind of crushed up lasagna, and it was very tasty.
Oh, I bet.
That stuff that's been sitting in my kitchen for a year, right? And it was just because I want to stretch out my trips to the grocery store. I want to save those Instacart fees. Instacart's a wonderful service, by the way, but, you know, I prefer the idea of fewer people shopping for multiple people. It's smarter. If you can afford it for the people who can't, you're keeping everybody safer. But yeah, I've been trying to make it as fun as I possibly can for myself, finding little things to chuckle about, even if it's sort of dark humor. And I think that's really important, because I've caught myself a few times short of breath just from the anxiety watching the news. And instead of forcing myself to watch it, I turned it off. I started watching, you know, I turned on Forged in Fire or Blackish. Those are my two go-to shows, you know, because if some dude can make a knife out of a tractor, I can get through this. You know, like some dude just ripped apart a tractor and made a knife out of it. And then they took the tire and put a handle on it. Human beings are ingenious. We can get through this.
Well, and you know, that's, I think, sums it up. We're not being called to war. We're being asked to sit on our couch with Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. How freaking privileged and entitled do we have to be as a nation to be bitching about this? So that's kind of the attitude I've been trying to show to my kids. You know, I've got like lots and lots of kids, and it's like, this is what we're doing, and let's make the best of it. And I'm not being, you know, we are doing school, but we're making a game of it. It's not structured. And I'm doing exactly what you said in our kitchen. It's like, okay, here are like 5 ingredients. And we actually watch the Food Network. Like, we watch, you know, Chopped.
Right.
So it's like, here are my 5 ingredients. What should we make for dinner?
Right. Because that actually teaches you the fundamentals of cooking.
Oh, yeah. And we're having a blast with it. You know, my 6-year-old, it was his birthday yesterday. We had to cancel his birthday party. It was going to be his first one ever. So we, you know what? We didn't make a big deal. We said, this is what's going on, and we're doing it for the greater good. So we're going to have a lot of fun. And we had balloons, and he got, for the whole day, what he got to do was not do chores. Okay. And he got to choose all the meals, what we had for breakfast, for lunch, awesome. For dinner. And he thought, you know, that was the cat's ass. He forgot all about his birthday party.
Right. That sounds a lot better than my cat's ass. Your cat's ass must be really, really clean, Michelle, because I would take being able to choose to eat over my cat's ass.
Well,
I love,
you know,
my
what?
Cats.
But, that's a lot of toilet paper to get those clean asses.
My cat's very fluffy and sometimes needs assistance. But Rose, what's your sort of motivational, what's your sort of positive messaging for this time? And probably a good place to close.
My message to people is to just keep your head up.
Yeah.
You know, look at your glasses half full, not half empty. Reach out support if you need it. Like, take this time to Google positive things, excuse me, yeah, and not negative things.
That's a good point. Your mood is going to be determined by what you seek out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you looking at on Facebook? What are you reading on Instagram? What are you Googling? What are you watching on YouTube? Take this opportunity to work on something, maybe a project that, you know, you wanted to do for years and you've now got a little time. Yep. Doesn't mean you have to finish it, but at least, you know, let your mind wander, become creative, you know,
but let your mind wander into happy places, not, oh my right. God. Yeah.
What are your support systems? So for example, was it United Way was given tons of money to make sure that people had food.
Right.
So if you are running out of food, if you need support, start Googling where in your community that you can get that for when that time comes. You may not need to use it, but at least if you do, instead of worrying about it, be proactive and find some solutions.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, now's a point in time where there's no shame in engaging those services because everybody knows that people are in this position through no fault of their own. Exactly. So you don't have to worry about being judged. You don't have to worry. It's kind of nice. Hopefully we'll get over this idea that people are out of work because they're lazy or they did something wrong.
Right.
That's not always the case. You can't assume that. So I hope that's something that pivots. But yeah, a lot of restaurants now, because they've got all this leftover food, they're starting to prepare meals, especially for seniors. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. I wish the media was doing overall a better job with that kind of content, but it is out there.
Excuse me. And that's another good point. Like, you know, the supermarkets has hours for elderly people in some areas.
Yeah, in the morning.
You know, if you're an able-bodied person and, you know, you have a neighbor who's elderly and they can't get out, you know, knock the door and leave a note.
Yeah.
Or ask them if they need support. How can I support you? You know, if we sometimes focus on the needs of others, our needs get filled as well.
Yeah, it's a good time to reach out to someone and just kind of go, hey, how you doing? Because, I mean, there are other people. I know someone who's pregnant right now. That must be terrifying for her. I know somebody else who's in a hospital for a blood clot, and I know they're scared. And so I just feel like my role in that is to talk about anything but that with them, because they'll have plenty of time to focus on that anxiety, that presumptive fear. You don't have to, because let's face it, whether you're afraid or not afraid, it isn't going to change the outcome anyway. You know, like, don't beat yourself up because you have a positive attitude and things didn't go perfectly. It's not going to go perfectly, but if you have a positive attitude, you didn't waste all that time, you know, ahead of time waiting for the shit to come. At least you enjoyed yourself then. Smartly. Don't go to fucking bars. They're all closed now, but oh my God, people in the US, I don't know what's wrong with
they're
them.
They're not here.
Yeah. Like, there are apparently some people on St. Patrick's Day, a couple of bars that stayed open, and I've never been so glad to loathe St. Patrick's Day in all my life. I have a blood feud with St. Patrick's Day because I go in there and I'm the only person in the whole restaurant they don't make wear a hat. Like, they go in, they hand my friend, you know, the green top hat, and they look at me, it's like, you're covered, Ginger. So that's sort of my rant about nothing involving COVID-19. So ladies, thanks so much. This hopefully gave people some boost. This was really useful. And I know we'll all get through this together is a platitude, but we'll get through this in bunches. Your favorite people. It's a good time to stay in touch with your favorite people right now. Rose, Michelle, any final words? We'll start with Rose, then Michelle. What do you guys want to say? What do you guys want to shout out? Anything like that?
Just keep washing your hands.
Yes, wash your hands.
Keep and washing your hands. Stop buying toilet paper.
Stop buying toilet paper. Unless you actually need toilet paper, then it's okay. All right, ladies, thanks so much. This has been Hey Ladies on the FU Network, funetwork.tv. Support us on Patreon if you're not laid off. funetworktv at patreon.com. Thanks, everybody.
This is fun. The FU Network.